It's in the middle of the night in late April 1890.
Painter Edlund
was fast asleep in his house, which was practically situated in the very center of Östersund, a town in Jämtland. This night, he had a young newlywed couple as paying house guests. Earlier in the evening, he had heard sounds from the next room. It had sounded as if someone was sick. Suddenly, he woke up. The sounds had become louder. He heard the door to the next room open, and when he hurried out, he met a horrific sight. The young wife,
Edla, was hysterically running up and down the hall.
Her hands and white nightgown were covered in blood, and as she was running, she kept screaming, "I think they murdered my husband. I think he is dying." Murder Ballads is a podcast about horrific true crimes from the 18th, 19th, and early 20th centuries. The main source material for this podcast is original newspaper articles and trial protocols, but also from old songs that were written, sold, and sung by the people of this day and age who love true crime as much as you and I. Östersund is a town in the very middle of Sweden, situated next to the large lake Storsjön, which is rumored since the 17th century to harbor the fabled sea monster Storsjöodjuret, which directly translated means big lake monster.
But even if Östersund is situated centrally in the country,
the vast majority of Sweden's citizens live and used to live far south of this deep woodland. The city is surrounded by deep, dark pine and spruce forests, and snowy mountain tops can be seen over the forest tops. In the winter, the cold and the dark reign supreme, since the sun barely reaches over the horizon. And during summer, it really never gets completely dark. In the mid-19th century, the city transformed from a shady and lawless town to a place where trade and crafting thrived. In 1879, the railroad was built. And the years after that, the city grew quickly.
Edla Andersdotter was born to a wealthy home on December 5th, 1866, in Hara, located south of Östersund. Edla was a weak and sick child. By the age of 3 or 4, Edla had suffered from rickets.
She often had severe headaches and easily fainted. And since she had problems with her eyes, she was forced to stay in a dark room for 2 straight years in her childhood. After eye surgery in Stockholm, twice,
things improved for Edla's health.
But her headaches continued and she always remained cross-eyed. Despite her being a weak child, she was also described as cheerful, friendly, homely, and kind during her upbringing. Her intellectual gifts are described as above average.
The horse dealer, Carl Andersson, from Måläng, a village nearby Hara, was known for many years in Edla's parents' home. Carl had, among other things, helped during the slaughter in Hara.
Over time, warmer feelings had grown between him and Edla.
But even though Carl talked to Edla several times about marriage, she had never approved. Whatever the feelings were between Edla and Carl Andersson, another man soon appeared in Edla's life. Jöns Hedin, with the full name Johannes Mikael Mikkelsson Hedin, was also acquainted with Edla since childhood.
But one day in August in the year 1889, on the steamboat towards the city and the autumn market,
he had approached her and feelings started to grow between them. And so it was that during the beautiful Swedish autumn, with the yellow, orange and red colored forests, Edla and Jöns fell in love. Jöns started to visit Edla in her home. Soon he often stayed overnight and shared Edla's bed. This continued through September and October. However, what Jöns didn't know was that Edla also kept contact with her first love, Carl Andersson,
though she never invited him to visit her. But the happiness and beauty of the autumn didn't last. The long and dark Swedish winter soon arrived. And in December,
Edla realized that she was pregnant. This made her angry. She told Jöns that she no longer liked him. Jöns, however, was delighted and promised that he would take good care of her and the baby. However, when Edla insisted that she wanted to split up,
that she didn't want to marry Jöns, he became upset. He told her that he could not live unless she became his wife. He also reminded her about the pregnancy and adding that he had been fooled by so many girls before that now he would not be fooled again and would be unhappy if she broke up with him. And Edla now realized that she didn't have much of a choice. She had to marry Jöns. And so they started to plan their wedding.
As Edla's feelings for Jöns cooled, feelings for Carl Andersson woke up again. Jöns had become so different, so unbearable. If only there was a way for her to get back together with Carl.
And shortly thereafter it occurred to her,
there was a way. When Edla was visiting Östersund for Christmas shopping,
she saw a large hunting knife. And it occurred to her that she could buy it. And with the help of this hunting knife, she could become a widow. And even though she didn't buy the hunting knife, the thought of getting rid of her husband stayed with her.
Soon after Christmas, people around her started noticing that Edla asked odd questions.
She asked the butcher how to slaughter cattle. She asked an old lady if she had some arsenic so she could kill flies. This was considered odd, since there were no flies in February.
Carl Andersson soon found out about the wedding plans between Edla and Jöns. He went as far as to write the village priest and complain about the union of Edla and Jöns. Edla was his. Even though Carl was upset and tried to stop the wedding, it didn't stop Jöns from getting his Edla. On April 7th, Edla married Jöns Hedin, and on the wedding day, Edla had looked so happy that many of the guests expressed that they had never seen such a happy bride. A few days after the wedding, Jöns traveled to Härjedalen to buy cattle. And while Jöns was gone, Edla stayed with her parents in Hara. And according to Edla, this was when she had her first attack.
She had suddenly experienced severe chest pain and shortly thereafter a headache occurred. And she had come up with strange thoughts as if the husband had deceived her. That he had caused her to be prematurely pregnant to win her. Sometimes she felt the deepest love for him, sometimes the most bitter hate.
And when the hatred took over, she thought of killing her husband.
2 weeks after the wedding,
Jöns came back from his journey. Edla's parents described Edla as so happy that Jöns would come back that she had made coffee for him at 11 o'clock in the evening. According to Edla,
she soon had another attack. She suddenly felt chest pain and a severe headache.
And that's when she realized the arsenic. That is how it's going to happen. He needed to die.
So she went and got the arsenic she had bought in February
and mixed it with some jam and cream and gave it to Jöns.
He got sick.
Jöns complained of torments, heat and dryness in his throat. And then suddenly Edla changed her mind.
She was now worried that he would actually die. Now, instead of hate, she only felt a great affection for her husband.
But when he was still alive 2 days later, the need to kill returned.
She took all arsenic she had left and poured it into a glass of water. However, she forgot to mix it properly, and most had dropped to the bottom.
Now that she was out of arsenic, she started to improvise. She found quicksilver, which she shook together with milk and gave Jöns. A few days later, she gave him wise man's liniment instead of medicine. Jöns vomited, he had diarrhea, he became very, very ill. But he did not die. So a few days later, Edla traveled to Östersund and returned to that hunting shop where she had seen the knife. At G.A. Svensson and Company, she bought a butcher's knife with a blade more than 20 centimeters long and a two-edged tip. She put it in her backpack and left the shop. Some more days later, Jöns was up on his feet and he was healthy enough to travel to the city.
He needed to do some errands and he wanted to see a doctor. And so it was that on Tuesday, April 28th,
the Hedin spouses went to the city together.
At 3 o'clock, they came to the city and checked in with the painter Edlund, as it was located near Dr. Westerberg's residence. First, Jöns met with the doctor, and after, Edla went in and inquired about the man's health. The doctor had told her that Jöns should stay dry on his feet. Edla had then requested for a prescription to get some sleeping drops for a 60-year-old lady she knew. The doctor trusted Edla and gave her some sleeping drops. In the evening, the spouses had spent a few hours with acquaintances, and Edla had played music for a while, and she had sat next to her husband and leaned her head lovingly against his. At 11:30, they went to bed after both of them drank from the sleeping drops and some vichy water. Edla was dressed in a skirt and nightdress, her usual nightgown. Her husband fell asleep quickly, but Edla lay awake long before she finally fell asleep. Edla woke up in the middle of the night, and then the thoughts came to her. Now, it needs to happen. From her place in the bed next to the wall, she climbed out of the bed, opened her backpack, and brought out the 20-centimeter long, double-edged hunting knife. And then she went back and stood beside the bed. It was dark in the room, but she unbuttoned the shirt of her husband, lifted the knife, and stabbed. The knife cut into his throat. Jöns sat up, but shortly after he fell back down. Immediately she felt a surge of anxiety and despair, but now it was too late. She embraced him. Afraid of what she had just done and the consequences thereof, she at first tried to conceal the murder weapon in the bed, but then ran out into the yard and slammed it into the ground, whereupon she returned and made an alarm. She ran back and forth through the corridors with her hands and linen stained with blood, under the cry, "My husband is murdered, help, I think he is dying." Painter Edlund had heard sounds during the night, as if by someone who was sick. The sounds had been silenced and then started again, only this time they had become louder. Finally, someone had opened the door, and when he hurried out, he found the young wife, covered in blood, shouting in hysteria. Painter Edlund went into their guest room, and it was dark in there. But when candles were lit, he was met by a horrible sight. The husband lay across the bed with his legs outside the bed edge, and on his neck, from a gaping stab wound, blood rushed forward. His entire head was covered in blood and it had drenched the bed. The man breathed heavily and for each breath, a stream of blood was released. He stared at them in horror, but didn't say a word. They immediately sent for help. But when the doctor arrived at 2 a.m., the young husband was already dead. Edla had turned unruly and wild. She talked incoherently about a man being in the room. She was saying that Jöns had been out vomiting at night and he must have forgotten to lock the door behind him. That it was a pity that she had not gotten the killer, that the killer had run down the towards the lake. At 4 a.m, she was taken to relatives nearby. A few days later, the autopsy protocol was printed in the local newspaper. And here follows a translated, shortened version. The autopsy of the murdered innkeeper Jöns Hedin's body took place yesterday and seems to lend further support to the assumption that the murder weapon was carried by a very powerful hand. At 2 centimeters, above the upper edge of the sternum, immediately to the right of the midline of the neck, there was a gaping wound 3 centimeters in diameter, exposing the trachea, leaving the pulmonary vein untouched, but cutting off the largest blood vessels. The wound had further opened the right lung sac, with a more than 8 centimeters long incision. In the right lung sac, there was close to 1.5 liters of blood. A lot of blood flowed out of the wound at pressure. The wound had been made by a 10 to 12 centimeter long item. No poisoning can be detected. The stomach and intestines show traces of mild inflammation. The urinary bladder was filled with urine, a crucial contradiction to the statement that Jöns should have been outdoors on the night of his murder to satisfy his natural needs. After the death of her husband,
Iadla
was so upset and mentally affected, she was taken to a hospital where she got cared for under supervision for 3 days. She was then allowed to accompany her relatives home. For the upcoming 2 days, she maintained the same version about the course of the murder scene when she spoke to her parents and her pastor. However, within herself, she fought a difficult battle. The burden of the terrible secret soon became too heavy for her to carry, and only 2 days later, on the Sunday, she told the truth to her parents. "It was I who did it," she repeated several times. "It was me who held the knife." She also told them that she wanted to go to the police. She wanted to confess her crime. And so she and her parents traveled into the city and went to the police station. At 7 in the evening, she was brought to the police station. Entering the police officer's room, she went straight to him. She took his hand and said, "I have not told the truth." "No, so I have understood," he replied, "although I did not speak my suspicions out loud. But now I shall speak about it all," she added. And as far as the police officer could tell, what she then confessed to him sounded like the truth. At times during her confession, she leaned her head down with a sad expression, but said that she was unable to cry. She expressed her despair over the child she carried, her fear that she would not be allowed to keep it when she was to suffer her punishment. The grief of her parents and mother-in-law also occupied her greatly.
The newspapers published extras about the incident, with details about the event, as well as speculations on who could be the murderer. They wrote about the fact that Edla had been involved with another man before her relationship with Jöns Hedin. Could this be a jealousy drama? Was Carl Andersson perhaps the murderer? Fortunately, it was quickly established that Carl had a solid alibi. Another topic discussed in the newspapers was Edla's pregnancy and the possibility of its impact on her state of mind. Could hysteria, in fact, explain her sudden murderous desires? And here is a translated quote from one of the articles.
"If one can reasonably speak of an abnormality of the soul in a large number of criminals, then in this criminal's case, perhaps a temporary abnormality of the soul can occur. In this case, induced by the woman's pregnancy, and of such importance that it cannot be ignored when assessing her crime. The first half of the trial was held over summer 1890.
Many witnesses were interrogated, and their words were printed word by word in the local newspaper the day after each of the trial sessions. In fact, it was written about this trial in newspapers all over Sweden at the time. During the trial, the man whom Edla claimed had sold her the arsenic testified that he had found it strange that she wanted to buy arsenic to kill flies in February. He stated that he hadn't given her real arsenic, but rather a harmless grey root powder. He also mentioned that during Edla's visit to his shop, he had jokingly asked her if she was planning to use the arsenic for an abortion. However, the real reason for why he gave her harmless root powder instead of real arsenic remains unclear. But it explains why Jöns didn't die from it. One of the guard women at the jail testified that Edla had asked to speak to her mother and sister. Edla had tried to persuade the guard woman to ask her sister to go down to the prison yard and stand where she would be able to hear Edla's voice. Edla also tried to get the prison guard to hand her sister a package consisting of a wrapped scarf and a small note. The prison guard had, of course, refused. The small note had said, "Open the scarf package where no one can see you." Inside the scarf package, another note was hidden. That was read out loud in the court. "Read this where no one can see you. Dearest, tell the court that on the Sunday after our wedding, when Jöns had traveled away, say that I had come rushing into the kitchen after an evening nap at about 10:30, and that I had been so sweaty and nervous and staring. Say that I had seemed so unusual that you had asked if I were dreaming, and then I answered something strange that you did not understand,
And if the judge asks if you have seen some yellow and brown knitting yarn, then answer yes. Oh, dearest, say it like this, both mother and you. Tell her where no one can hear. Tell her that a couple of times after my engagement to Jöns, that I complained about becoming so terribly strange, as if I did not understand what was happening. Tell her that I could seem happy at first, and suddenly I could get brain attacks. Say it like that. Say attack.
The same female prison guard also testified in court of another odd event that had taken place. One night, the guard had awoken with Edla standing over her, holding her hand around the prison guard's throat, not hard.
And even though this happened, the guard claimed that she did not think Edla's intention was to strangle her. Edla also pretended to strangle herself a couple of times.
She wrapped a scarf around her own throat and pulled, as if to see how far she could go without breathing.
On August 2nd, 1890, the trials were paused because on this date, Edla gave birth to a healthy baby boy who she named Johan Olof Evald. However, Edla did not get to keep the child with her in prison. Instead, the baby was taken care of by Edla's parents. In the newspaper, one could read that Edla expressed great regret about having her baby taken away from her.
After this, it would be several months before the trial would continue.
At first, Edla was too sick and weak.
And after that, it was decided that she needed to undergo a mental health evaluation.
Two doctors studied Edla during the autumn of 1890. The prison doctor, A. Sjölin, made a written statement about her mental health. He stated that Edla was ordinary height and physique,
that she had strong muscles and that her circulatory, respiratory and digestive organs functioned normally. The doctor also stated that before giving birth, her state of mind was very different compared to the postnatal period. Before giving birth, she was described to have had a gloomy facial expression and a shy look, and whether she was sitting or walking in the cell, she always had her head strongly bent forward. She had acted rebellious and had no desire to work. She had worried about the death sentence that likely awaited her, and she had spoken much about it. After birth, however, a change had occurred. She now had a more bold and calm facial expression, and often had a happy look on her face. The first doctor, however, concluded that despite this change in mood,
Edla was not mentally ill,
and that she was in full use of her intellect at the time of the crime. The second doctor, however, was of another opinion. Here are some excerpts from his written statement.
It is a well-known thing that the woman's soul life during pregnancy shows a more or less noticeable change, from the smallest, most insignificant hysterical symptoms to the most severe. In my opinion, a woman in a pregnant state can be led by a fixed idea to commit an act which she would never have done in a non-pregnant state. Considering Edla's state of mind during childhood and adolescence, according to testimonials from her priest, I do not hold it unlikely. In fact, I am almost convinced that she would not have committed the crime for which she now stands accused of. When it was finally time for the verdict, the interest was enormous. In the local newspaper on the 5th of January, we read, "Last night, before the town hall court, Edla received her verdict. It read that Edla had repeatedly tried to kill her husband, whom she ultimately murdered. And for those crimes, she was sentenced to death." Edla just stood cold and numb during the verdict. The case of Edla Hedin was appealed first to the district court and then to Svea hovrätt, the court of appeal, but the same sentence remained. Edla's chances of avoiding execution were growing thin, but she did not give up. She appealed to be spared from the death penalty by requesting that the documents from her case should be submitted to the medical board and demanded that a new investigation should be carried out regarding her mental state during pregnancy. On July 27, 1891, the Royal Majesty had read her plea to be pardoned and decided his verdict, and it was time for her final judgment. Edla was pardoned. Her death penalty was changed to lifetime labor in prison. After 14 years in prison, Edla was released in 1905. 5 years after she was released, it's known that she lived in the same household as her son, Johan Olof Ewald. After 15 years of freedom, Edla died at the hospital in Östersund on July 24th, 1920, at the age of 53. If you like this podcast, please leave a comment, as it would greatly help in reaching a wider audience. Thank you for listening.